Hello and welcome to The Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min podcast network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by Rob Blanchett as per usual. We're speaking ahead of the Burnley game at Old Trafford on Saturday. United have just beaten Sheffield United with a scare or two, obviously. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be United's season if they didn't concede from a cutback and have an individual mistake where Andre Onana passes it out to an opposition player for them to score. It's just the story of the season. Anyway, Rob, we're back. What's up?
Yeah, we're back. And you won that game. And now what? Scott is six on. It's Europa League on. Like, it's... They kind of move up the table. You look at United's reigning game, Scott. They should be better placed than where they are, shouldn't they? But even again, as you said, that Sheffield United game wasn't exactly comfortable, even though the final score does look convincing. But, you know, it wasn't a comfortable game of football, was it?
Well, they did create a few chances, but so did Sheffield United. But that's how it is. Sheffield United could be relegated this weekend. Burnley likely to join them at the next team to visit Old Trafford. We'll maybe look ahead to that a little bit later in the show. But how much can you really say? But what we will talk about today is... Bruno Fernandes got a lot of love for his performance the other night, so we'll talk about what the best way to use him is, I suppose. Two goals and an assist. He then also said he spent the last 9 minutes of the game trying to set up the latest academy graduate making his debut for United to score his first goal on his debut, but didn't happen. But yeah, we'll talk about him. We'll talk about Dan Ashworth, who is pushing for the United move to go through with Newcastle digging their heels in over compensation. And we'll talk about the main topic of the day. Marcus Rashford has spoken out on social media again around abuse he is receiving. And well, we'll maybe unpack. Do we think it's somewhere in the middle? You know, maybe I kind of understand his point of view, but also the other side. I'm sure many people feel that he's not playing at his best at the moment.
Yeah, like when we get to that segment, we'll do it. But it's a multifaceted issue. And I think the thing is that, again, unfortunately, with social media, is that it becomes about one versus the other, doesn't it? It becomes a culture war as opposed to a discussion or anything kind of real, Scott. It's just opinions, isn't it? So that's Marcus's opinion, so we will discuss that today and kind of dig into the detail.
Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts on audio. On Apple and Spotify is usually where you can find us. Give us a 5-star review as well, and watch us on YouTube where you can like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment, and hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. And follow us on social at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC on X as well. And we'll start, as we mentioned, with the Bruno chat, because he's got a lot of love, Rob. I think he's not been great this season, but I know that you specifically have spoken about playing him in the right position, putting him in the right areas to receive the ball. And obviously he scored a penalty, which was given after United scored a goal, which was interesting, but nice penalty from him. And then obviously he scores with his left foot from about 25 yards in. We know he's capable of that. Maybe we haven't seen it enough really from him, but he scored a few bangers like that this season. One at Galatasaray, I believe, in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. That one as well, and a few others. And he's quite divisive. He is the... Some people say he's first out the door. Other people say United can't get by without him. Let's circle back on this, Rob. Where do you stand on that?
It's quite interesting, as you said, again, opinion-wise, it's either one or the other, isn't it? It's that you either get rid of Bruno and he's got to go, or Bruno's God. And again, it's probably somewhere in the middle, isn't it? Obviously, I'm famously known for being hard on Bruno Fernandes, and people will say to me, oh, Rob, you hate Bruno. I don't hate Bruno. Sorry, people, you're wrong. Yeah, I don't hate Bruno. What I don't like, as you just said there, has Bruno had a good season? I don't think he has. But I also have all the sympathy in the world for him, because he's playing in a position that I don't think he's very good at. It's just as simple as that. He's played primarily the whole season, hasn't he? Or a big chunk of the season, playing out of the eight, yeah? Being a deeper midfielder and having to help him do all of that stuff, get the ball off the edge of his own box and what Man United become, Scott, long ball merchant, hit the ball in the channel. Bruno's probably the best person to do that. That's why he's getting the ball deeper. I think when it comes down to it, 2 years ago, when Ten Hag came to the football club, I remember in one of the earliest games, he played a system where he played Eriksen and Bruno through the middle. And then he changed the system and he put Bruno wide right and he decided to say play Eriksen higher up the pitch. And I thought to myself, a bit odd that, because you could literally play Bruno in his main position as the 10. And that's what you want. He's like the guy who did all the work under Solskjaer, got you to second in the league. That's why you bought him. Number 10, purveyor, creator, all of this stuff, all the stats. In that whole 2 years, Scott, Erik ten Hag's done everything he can to play Bruno Fernandes everywhere but the number 10. That's the truth. So to me, the manager, for some reason, prefers that. I am on the opposite side of that scale, and I think probably you are as well, is that I want to see Bruno Fernandes in and around the box, on the edge, helping the striker, you know, and getting the shot that he got the other night, you know, from 25 yards, he can hit that top corner. But you know what, Scott? If he's working back to the right-back positions, trying to help coverage and all that as a midfielder, what do we expect from Bruno Fernandes? So I would like to see more Bruno through the 10. And I think if we saw Bruno more through the 10 this year, Scott, funnily enough, I think Man United might want more games and scored more goals. That's just my opinion.
What was it that led him to playing more in the 10 the other day? Was it Jason Wilcox coming in and demanding United play possession football? And then 24 hours later, we see a different style? Or was that just coincidence?
I think it was interesting that on the day, like, you know, when that story came out and it was like, oh, Jason Wilcox has told Eric that we have to play more possession football. And I was like, funny kind of day one assessment. Like, that's true, but like, you can't just say to a manager what you've been doing for a year, you have to rip it all up on one day. Like, come on. However, they did play better position football against, but it's Sheffield United, first and foremost. Like, let's be honest, Sheffield United are a hot mess and are garbage. Sorry, Sheffield United. It is absolutely true. The fact that they scored two goals at Old Trafford in itself is some kind of level of shame when they couldn't score goals anywhere else, basically, this year. But United did pass the ball much better again for that first hour. I thought that they got the ball on the deck and it was much more methodical. And yes, we saw Bruno in advanced areas more, you know, in terms of the shape. It wasn't 4-2-3-1, but the other midfielders were tasked to do that. So again, you had Eriksen on the pitch, someone who can get the ball deeper and just move it, you know, move it to the right places quicker. And we've not had that, of course, because Eriksen's not been in the team. And you still see with Eriksen maybe some of that physicality. He's never had it in his game. But as he gets older, it gets harder. So I think seeing Bruno higher up the pitch is a positive thing. If Jason Wilcox and Dan Ashworth are going to say, do you know what? He's probably one of our best creators. Wouldn't it make sense, manager, whoever it might be, to have that guy in and around the box? Because that's the logic I'm working on. You know, I know there's going to be some weeks where you have to play him in other positions. I think I did the count back yesterday. I think it's 2/3 of the games this year he's played in attacking roles, but for the other third, he's played defensive roles or more defensive. I don't want that. I'd rather play Amrabat there or someone else if you want to do defensive work and get Bruno higher up the pitch and get Bruno closer to Højlund. I've seen people criticise Højlund in the last few weeks, and I often say to myself, well, he needs Bruno near him. He does. He needs a creator in the number 10 because he's not getting those chances that he desperately needs. So I think we did see a little bit of that. A little bit of a tweak in terms of where Bruno was playing. But the position, I think, is massively important, maybe more important than fans make out.
There was another story that came out in the week which said that Højlund and Bruno fell out because Højlund felt like Bruno wasn't passing to him enough. That was a few months ago.
Maybe.
But he passed to him the other day and he got an assist. But yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that. Like, they might fall out about, you didn't pass to me in that game.
Yeah, it's just standard football club stuff.
Yeah, of course it is. Like, again, if you've ever been in any dressing room, there'll be a time when you'll go up to your mate who you play with and go, why did you not give me the ball? You know, and you'd have a little bit of a tiff about it, but it's not, you know, it's not particularly newsworthy, is it?
Well, anything is newsworthy in United world.
Yes, so, of course.
Yeah, so Bruno Fernandes making his impression, his impact. He was in my FPL team, as you mentioned just before we started streaming. So that's the Robberpalooza Invitational is quite close at the moment. But anyway.
Very close.
Yeah. So Bruno, get in. Do you want to give him his flowers before we move on? Do you anything else you want to say on him? Because I think we both agree, really, that he's not the first problem in the team, is he? You know, like people will say. but you know, where would you put him if United were shifting culture? How important is he culturally?
Again, it's like there's no right or wrong answer on it. I think the issue is with Bruno is that, yeah, on one side you can look at some of the petulant stuff that he does on a football pitch, but we're so short of leaders anyway that then it's difficult, isn't it? Like we saw this last week, Harry Maguire kind of again be elevated as a leader, both in his interview that he did, I think it was only yesterday, wasn't it? But also like at the end of the cup semi-final, is that Bruno is Bruno and he will do Bruno. That's fine. That's just what he is. But you have to decide where you play him. And I think if you're going to play in midfield where he plays in deeper positions, then you bench him. That's the way I look at it. Is that if that's what you think as a manager, then having him in deeper roles doesn't help him and doesn't really help the team. So I wouldn't see Bruno start every game as a 10 Scott. And you build from that. That's how you build culture. You go like, this week, Bruno Fernandes is playing the 10. And we don't really discuss it because that's where he plays. That's how good football teams operate, is that people know their roles. I think with Bruno, because he's so keen to help and do stuff and he does have work rate, then he just gets used in other ways. Do you get what I'm saying? And I don't really think that helps him. So, no, he's not the biggest problem at the club. Of course he's not. There's a lot of problems at Man United. But I'd just like to see next year that whoever the manager is, whether it be Eric or someone else, is that Bruno Fernandes will definitely be at the football club. I'm sure he will be. And that you use him as a 10. And if you really think that you can't use him as a 10 or you don't want him to be your number 10, then sell him. Just it's a business, right? At the end of the day, if he's not what you want for whatever reason, that's what the management team decide, then take the cash now and go and get someone that you want to be the 10. But I'd rather just see Bruno as the 10. I think he can do it. He's got all the numbers and the stats. His stats this year are still pretty good, considering that he's been playing more defensive roles and doing stuff deeper on the pitch. Kobbie Manu's return from injury helped Bruno tons. Yeah, Kobbie coming through has helped him loads. You look at the rest of them, Scott. I don't know if anyone else has helped Bruno. Do you know what I mean? I think just that's helped Bruno be up the pitch a little bit more. But I want to see Bruno right up the top of the field. I didn't want to play him as a false nine some weeks. Go play him as a false nine, drop the striker, and go and play a system where you can get the ball, get the possession around the box, score more goals.
How many teams play with a 10 nowadays? Because the thing is, two 10s. So you can understand. Well, that's why United's midfield looks so open a lot of the time. Well, two eights, isn't it? So
two eights.
Most of the best teams really play with two advanced eights, but they do a much better job of compacting the space than United do to be stopped being caught on the transition.
Yeah.
So how many teams really nowadays set up with a two defensive mids and a 10? Is that outdated?
I think the whole idea of two defensive midfields, midfield players, does not mean that you can't play 4-2-3-1, right? Because again, in the systematic world, people think the two have to be like destroyers or sixes or dual sixes, whatever you want to call them. I think the thing is, Scott, like you said there, that Ten Hag wants to play a kind of dual eight system, two floating eights, as they call it in tactical terms. So it ends up being a pivot. So it's a 4-1-4-1. That's what he loves. That's what he wants to do. I think what you see with Bruno is that Bruno is so erratic, maybe in some of his movement, like he'll go follow the ball, he'll follow parts of the pitch that maybe he shouldn't do at times, is that he doesn't have the discipline to go and do what he needs to do. But you're almost like letting him off the leash with that. Do you know what I mean? So if you've got Casemiro there who's slow, and then in front of him, you've got Manu who's gone from the six to the eight, and then you've got Bruno in the eight. It might sound easy, like, oh yeah, it's just 4-3-3 effectively, but it's not really. It's not in terms of what they're being told to do. So I think with Bruno is that you need a proper midfield there. That's the whole idea, is that 4-1-4-1 I don't think works. I think that's more outdated. And United need to be a more functional 4-3-3, which would be, Scott, a 6-8 and a 10. Yeah, that's what you would do in terms of the profile. But of course, you still got to do everything. So like Jude Bellingham can play as a 10, but it doesn't mean he doesn't do the defensive stuff. Doesn't mean he doesn't track. Doesn't mean he doesn't try and tackle. But with Bruno, I don't want to see him in the deeper midfield roles because he gives the ball away and he doesn't help United in those moments. He actually makes it worse. So keep him closer around the box and let him go do that kind of bit that, say, Kevin De Bruyne likes doing most, you know, like being around the box. De Bruyne is also pretty good deeper because he's metronomic. He'll play the ball short. Bruno doesn't. Bruno wants to play the ball long, Hollywood passes. So I think this is why I talk about systems so often, and people go, oh, what are you talking about, Rob? What's a 10? What's an 8? What's a... Someone tweeted me the other day and said exactly that. They were like, oh, but it's all... that's a computer game knowledge. No, it isn't. It's what they talk about on training grounds, about what is my role as a 10. I would like to see Bruno being... knowing that he's a 10 and not an 8, because I don't actually think he knows that. I think he thinks he's just a midfielder who has to go and do 25 different things when maybe he should just be doing 4 or 5. You're on mute, Scott.
I was on mute. So apologies. And we've had some tweets come through the last few days about Bruno Fernandes. Lee Brown says, playing him at the top of a diamond or as a 10 behind two forwards would bring out the best in Bruno. It would also allow us to play three in and so strengthen the midfield. MSC Footy Fan says, I would be tempted to play him up front in false nine as well if there are striker injury issues. Otherwise, putting him behind the striker should be the priority. His shooting, finishing and his pressing are such an asset. Dunk says, the problem is the midfield that has lacked dynamism and passing ability, so he has to drop back to provide an option and fill space. He's primarily playing the more attacking space, though.
Yeah, and actually the stats back exactly that tweet up 100%, because he has played the attacking roles, as I said, in two-thirds of the game, and that's including Portugal. It's not just United. But for the other third, he's been playing in kind of 6-8 roles where he's been getting the ball much, much deeper. And he can do it to a level, but it's not elite. Like, so if you want to have a great midfield doing midfield things, Scott, Bruno Fernandes is not the answer. Like, it isn't. And I think Eric, in 2 years, hasn't really solved that or hasn't gone anywhere to finding solving that. I think bringing Amrabat in was supposed to solve that. And he's taken a player that he knew in Sofyan Amrabat and gone cold on him, hasn't he? Like, completely. Like, doesn't get minutes. The whole idea this year, I think, was that Mason Mount was going to come in and give you fundamentals in the 10, but be able to interchange with Bruno. So Bruno being a bit of 8 and then they're kind of swapping with each other. But they've not had a chance to develop that, have they? Because Mount is injured. So maybe that's something that if Ten Hag does stick around, that we will see. But I don't even want to see that. I just want to see Bruno playing the 10, and I want to see proper midfielders behind him doing all of the hard work. Just because Bruno can run around doesn't mean that that energy is what the team needs. The team needs structure and discipline and energy in the right moments. And maybe then Bruno will be a more productive player in the 10 and help United win more games. One of the things this year, Scott, we haven't scored enough goals, have we? Like, the attack has been rubbish this year.
I looked at the amount of goals United have scored this season versus the amount of goals they've conceded. I think the goals are like, they've conceded 10 more, but the goals scored are actually the issue in comparison to last season, which is quite weird to think, actually. I know that obviously Rashford's goal contribution has really dropped off, and there's a few other players that you can look at with that as well. But usually you'd look at the way United defend and think that that's the problem, but maybe the attack's a problem.
It's a perfect storm when it comes to about when you're attacking and defending, because again, I think Ten Hag's tried to find something. I called it shock and awe last week in terms of his tactics, and he's tried to find things where he's kind of shoehorning players into certain positions and roles. But ultimately, it doesn't really work. Why does it not work? Well, when you look at the goals scored, it's well down. You know, they're not good enough. Rashford's goals have completely dropped off. But then you have to look at Rashford and say, well, why have the goals dropped off? Are United creating the same chances as they were 12 months ago? I think the truth is, well, that isn't it. The answer is no, they're not. They're not being as productive in the final third. You brought Hoyland in as a young lad. You know that's going to take time to bed him in. So you're relying on a 20-year-old at the top, with a 19-year-old wider, now with an 18-year-old in midfield running the 8. You know, like, he's going to be difficult, isn't it? You might not be where you want to be in the top 4. So I would just like to see us go back to basics a little bit. And Bruno Fernandes is definitely part of the key there. I think if he was higher up the pitch, United would have scored more goals this year, even though his stats, as I said, are pretty good. But then you tell him that's his job. So you're the 10, go create everything, go score goals, go, you know, when the ball's on the edge of the box, Bruno, hit it. I allow you to do that. You should do that more. But I think this year he's been, you know, going back and protecting Dalot and going back and helping the centre-backs and being on the edge of the box and then hitting the ball miles into the sky. And you're like, I don't know if that's the best use of this footballer. And I'm sure he doesn't think it is either.
Bruno is said to have played through that game the other day with a broken hand that he sustained in the game against Coventry. So,
yeah,
you know, kudos points for him playing through pain. But anyway, let us know your comments. Yeah, let us know your thoughts on Bruno Fernandes. And we know he's divisive, but get in touch with us on what you think. I'd imagine the sentiment would be pretty positive, but if United lose this weekend and he doesn't do anything, or he gives the ball away too much, then maybe the sentiment will shift. We'll talk about another player with a mixed sentiment, to say the least, in a little bit, but we'll talk Dan Ashworth a minute. Mm-hmm. He is going to arbitration to try and force through his move from Newcastle, who are holding out for, I believe United and Newcastle are currently 13 million apart, according to latest reports, on a compensation fee for Dan Ashworth, who Newcastle painted as the person who made all the boo-boos in their transfer department, the person responsible for signing Sandro Tonali and not realizing he had issues with betting, and the person who has spent some money erratically, the person who has come in there and maybe upset the apple cart in a sense. Kind of weird, isn't it? The Newcastle value him so highly if he's that much of a problem.
Yeah, why would you want to keep him? Wouldn't you be sacking him and moving him on? Mm. You know, like Alexander Isak, did he sign him? Was he one of his players? You know, yeah, Aaron Gordon. There's plenty of players you go through that squad where he's had a positive effect on all of those things. But again, it's conjecture, isn't it? It's because he's absolutely leaving the club. They know that. That's it. And they're just trying to get some money out of it because that's what they're trying to do. I think as Sir Jim Ratcliffe said recently about it, it's all a little bit of a joke because employment law is employment law. And I don't actually think there's anything in this contract that says about a compensation number. And that is where it comes down.
I think there is actually.
Well, if that's the case, then they need to, if that goes to a court and there is like, say there's a mad number, 20 million. Yeah. Then they might be able to bring that down, but I don't know any director of football that has a £20 million release clause in them. They're not footballers.
Liverpool are paying £13 million to get a manager.
Yeah, because managers' contracts are more akin and more closer to players, right? So this is the thing. So it's a different kind of employment contract. So every now and then you might get someone exceptional who's got that in a business. Like, I don't know if any of the City guys behind the scenes have got that kind of thing. I think Berarda was similar, wasn't it? We had to go on gardening leave, but I don't think that there was any kind of extra compensation on top of that. So it can happen, but it is different. And I think when you look at it with managers, yeah, you have to go and release it because that's part of their contract. It's normally written in there that they want X amount of compensation from the deal. But I think with Dan Ashworth is that he's right now to take this to court. Like, just get it done. They don't even want him anymore. Like, they're done with him. They need to employ someone and move forward because their project doesn't stand still, does it? In the same way that Man United doesn't. So I think it will be done relatively soon now in a matter of weeks. It just might fill the tabloid column inches for a few more weeks to come.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Berarda, his gardening leave will end mid-July. So I think he starts in mid-July.
Not far now.
Not far away, really. Mm. And Jason Wilcox has just started, obviously, demanding that Man United play possession ball. And immediately we see a different a change in United's tack. But obviously, it was Sheffield United, so you don't know, do you? But
Southampton lost 5-0, so that was obviously because, you know,
yeah, that's true, actually. The demand he placed on possession football at Southampton, he just left, and therefore then they have
no, we're not doing it,
and they concede all of those goals. So, you know,
who needs to keep the football? No one. That's not football. It's like you do need to keep the football, but it was interesting that we did play a slightly different style against Sheffield United. I thought that was, you know, it was tweaks, but it was still interesting.
Just a quick word, actually. We've done the Ashworth bit. There's not loads of updates really, but Ethan Wheatley getting his debut in the week. Came on, says Bruno Fernandes, says I got 9 minutes to get you a goal. I thought that was quite nice, actually. Yeah. You know, really nice moment for him and for Bruno to go and say that to him. But obviously the goal didn't happen, but the 250th Academy graduate to play for United, that is a milestone.
It's incredible. And I did like when he came on, like the manager giving him a big hug and a cuddle and a pep talk before he obviously got on the pitch. Because again, I think that's part of our culture. It's what we want at Manchester United. We want to promote youth and do all of that. So it was great because obviously the kids had won the double the day before that. You know, I think he was part of that. He scored a goal. Actually brought off at half time, where that suggested that he might be playing the following day. So that's quite interesting why you're bringing him off at half time. But again, I think we need to look at that group of under 18-year-olds and not be scared to bring them in and play them, especially when this squad is still very much in transition about who's worth it and who's not. Bring these kids in, just like you did with Cobby, just like you did with Garnacho, and start giving them minutes just in some capacity. It's just, you know, it's about the process, isn't it? And I think, you know, Wheatley's he's a good player. There's definitely something about him. We're just talking here about goal scoring. You know, he could help you in the future next season. But you integrate now, don't you? That's the way to do it. And that under-18, Scott, that under-18 team is potentially the best under-18 team in the world. And people have to understand that in terms of standard. They are probably in that top echelon in the world and certainly in Europe of being one of the best under-18 academy teams on the planet. So take it. Take those players. Push them on. They might not make it in the end, but they're showing at the moment for their age group that they're absolutely up there. Get them in the team. You know, Man United need more like that, not less.
Yeah, especially in the last weeks of the season with, you know, Champions League's gone. Europa League, obviously, I think there's a hope. The only thing I don't want is Conference League. Like, just please no. Like, but it would be such the story of this season that United have been so bad that they fall into that league where they play Banik Ostrava or something in the group stages, or, you know, that I think maybe even they're too big a team.
Can't wait for those nights, Scott, when we do those shows. Do you know what I mean? But look, I think the figure is it won't happen, obviously, but we're playing Arsenal, aren't we, in this title running? And I think we'd all like Arsenal to win the title, not necessarily Man United lose to them. But let's be honest, maybe that's the time to play some kids against Arsenal and just say, well, we're just blooding the kids today and see what happens. But I don't know that would be tolerated by the press. Can you imagine that if United did that and Arsenal won? Oh my God. I'm imagining the headlines already now about how we bodged the title race away from Man City or something like that.
Well, City have to drop points in order to let Arsenal back in.
Only a draw, isn't it?
Only a draw, although they did score 4 last night. So if they continue free scoring, then they could win it on goal difference anyway. I think they're like 6 or 8 goals behind at the moment. But they do have a game in hand.
Yes.
And Tottenham also play Man City. So do you not think Tottenham would be thinking the same thing?
Yeah, I was going to say, but, you know? But the funny thing with Tottenham is that Tottenham are 6 points off top 4 and 2 games in hand. So there's a little bit more of a carrot for them.
Tottenham's running is awful.
It is awful. But
they play Arsenal, they play Chelsea, they play Liverpool and they play Man City.
They've got an awful run-in. They've got an awful run-in. But because they are shock and awe team, I can see them just playing a high line and just trying to hit people on counter-attacks and trying to score like that. And they've got the ability to score lots of goals in games. So could they, you know, could they go 3-3 against City or something, or 4-4? That wouldn't surprise me, you see, because it's kind of mad dysfunction. And I do think City are more vulnerable at the back this year than they have been in previous years. They're not as tight or as strong or as athletic as maybe they were last season when they won the treble. And yeah, maybe it's all there to play for. You know, that game at Old Trafford, I think, between United and Arsenal could be a really, really important cog in the title race.
Right, get in touch with us. We'll be talking next about Marcus Rashford and whatever is going on there now. He has he missed the game in the week. Injury?
Yes.
Not illness, wasn't it?
No, he had an injury. He limped off like quite badly. And in the mid zone after the game, he was kind of dragging his leg. So he was definitely injured.
So obviously we know that he did the piece with the Players Tribune 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago
yes.
now.
Yes.
Where he said, back me, and if you don't, great. He's quote tweeted overnight, 12:36 a.m. UK time. A tweet from United Paradigm, at United Paradigm. No idea. The way Marcus Rashford's being treated is absolutely disgusting. It's cruel. It's abuse. Rashford then quote tweets it. I appreciate your support. It is abuse, and it has been for months. Enough is enough. So, right. First off, everyone, like, if you have a comment, please feel free to get involved and tell us what you think in the comment section or on one of the social channels at @_ScottSaunders, at @TPLMUFC, and at @Rob_P. Because I don't know how to approach this, to be honest, because I obviously understand the impact that abuse can have on mental health. And yes, obviously, that you do not want to see that. And maybe I'm just not exposed to it enough. All I'll say is I haven't really seen too many people call him out beyond the football. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I could be wrong. What have you seen? But obviously, he's the one who gets all of it. So obviously, he, from his perspective, fair.
I think the thing is that footballers in general, but all of us to an extent, especially when it comes to social media, we all live in our little bubbles, don't we, at the end of the day? And we see what we see and we feel what we feel, right? And to us, it's authentic, and that's what it is, yeah? I think we look at Marcus Rashford. You know, I used the word perfect storm earlier on, and I think it's exactly the same thing now. Is that I don't think Rashford's probably getting any more abuse now than, say, when he was feeding the children. So when he was feeding the children, I know there was loads of United fans that actually didn't like that and actually came out and were quite vocal about it and saying, well, you know, you need to concentrate on your football, Marcus, you know, do all that stuff. And then there was rival fans who were quite hard on Marcus, saying, oh, you know, you're not actually good enough football, but like now you're the prime minister or something. So I think he's always been one of those figures where attacks are there in his background somewhere. I think it's also quite often, Scott, it's about whether you feel them or what you feel, yeah? And I think with Marcus, we know that in the last 6 months, things have not gone well for him, right? They just haven't. But there's two sides of this. There's his life, and then there's football. Yes, those two things meet. They absolutely do. But I think, again, Marcus quote tweeting a random account, like that account is just a random one. There's nothing in it. It's 400-500 followers. The only way he sees that is if he's searching the word Marcus Rashford. It's the truth. Like, he can't see it anyway.
That's a fair point. I mean,
he's not tagged in it, right? And it's just annoying. Again, I think if it was an influencer or a super fan or something like that, and they'd tagged him in, then maybe you see it. I understand that and you get it. But this is where the balance, again, between life, mental health really meet. And I've seen already today, like, you know, I've kind of provided you with some tweets there, which we'll talk through in a minute, and people defending and saying, oh, well, mental health, you know, we have to defend mental health. And we do. I'm absolutely 100% on board with that. And that is really, really important. When it comes down to this, and we're talking about football, again, I get down to the business of it. And that is that Marcus, when people criticize him, it is because of his form. It is because he doesn't press. It is because he looks completely wrecked out there. He really doesn't look like the player we know. That might be because of mental health issues, Scott. But if that's the case, then he shouldn't be playing. Right? That's the truth. And again, it happened with Jadon Sancho, didn't it? This is why Jadon Sancho got shipped out and moved off, and Ten Hag did that and got him out of the team and worked with it and worked away. But we know Marcus. As soon as Marcus is fit, Marcus will be in the team. Like, we know that. He's one of those undroppable players that when he's fit, you know, he's been dropped twice, isn't he, this year? Like, really, or put on the bench. And that's that. But if he's in this world at the moment, he's feeling all these things, it needs to be dealt with. And I just think in football, we've got too much of this now, where it's too much power shift in terms of social media. Marcus at 12:30 in the morning should not be quote tweeting about this. Do it the right way. Do it the way you want to do it. Do it in an article. Do it in an interview. But then there's also got to be a serious side with the football. And I think with Marcus, that balance has been lost. Yeah? And I think that's why there are people saying, sell Marcus Rashford now. Because He's on 350 grand a week. And again, people say, well, money doesn't make you happy. No, money doesn't make you happy. But he has a responsibility to the football club to perform to his high standards. And I think it's absolutely valid to criticise his standards this year. His standards are not being high enough. I also know that when Marcus did break his back, he did play through that pain for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And that showed what this club means to him. Do you know what I mean? So two things can be real and true at the same time. I have all the sympathy in the world for Marcus, but I do think he needs to do more on a football pitch. You just said, you just talked about Bruno Fernandes, didn't we? And Bruno's divisive character. But we actually do know that Bruno just puts it on the line every week. He works hard. He makes mistakes. He's a little bit over the top sometimes. You know what I mean? He'll roll around. But you still kind of know what Bruno is. I think the thing is with Marcus, we don't always know what he is, what he's thinking. And he is more of an introvert. He's admitted that. But introverts don't quote tweet at 12:30 in the morning a random account. Like, they don't. There's no, he knows that that is going to lead to more abuse. He does know that. So, unfortunately, sympathies have to be in place. But at the same time, I think there's also to be more rules, Scott, around this stuff. I don't want footballers on these accounts doing this because it's affecting our football club. And I think most people, especially younger people, might go, oh, but it's just what we do. Well, okay, but when you're on 350 grand a week, just don't do this. Please don't. Get the right help and find the right ways to do it. This is certainly not the right way to do it. Again, it's a little bit of a two fingers up, isn't it? Like, do you know what I mean? To the world. Like, it's a bit like when Jaden did the tweet. You know, Jaden is petulant. Marcus last night is petulance again. He doesn't need to do it, especially when he's injured and out of the team. Just go get healthy. Just chill out. Get your mental health back to where it needs to be. And again, how do you tell someone in their mid-20s that? Maybe I'm asking for too much.
I have to push you on the Sancho bit. I mean, the Sancho tweet that came out was him directly defying the manager.
Yeah.
Which I think is different in the sense
that is like different.
Rashford is sticking up for himself or showing his own.
But it's this. I've got an issue. I'm going to bang the screen, right? Look. And the thing is with Jaden is that Jaden might felt that he was absolutely valid to do that, yeah? But he shouldn't have done because it's professionalism. Marcus, last night at 12:30, might have thought, yeah, I'm going to quote tweet this. Why? So this is it's a cultural thing as much as anything, that when it meets the professional domain, that's what I'm talking about. And yeah, you're right with Jaden. There's sympathy for Jaden Sancho. Maybe Jaden's mental health is worse than Rashford's. Who knows? Like, I don't know. You don't know. So I think that's the balancing point here with some of this, is that now it's just a story again. We're doing it on our show, aren't we? Because if one of your top players does that, then you have to, again, unfortunately, address it.
Is there a difference between criticism and abuse? Because he has mentioned the word abuse. I'm seeing that on my timeline at the moment, that that people are saying that, and he's picked the word abuse specifically because it is abuse. And obviously, we see enough. We're not privy to everything that he sees. But I think your general point, Rob, is dealing with it by tweeting about it. I do agree. To be honest.
Yeah, totally. And I think the thing is, again, anyone who works in public domain, so I'm not talking about footballers, but even us, do you know what I mean? Like, you will get a certain level of abuse and you have to be very, very thick-skinned to a lot of it and read it. You know, I get constantly all the time, so on Twitter, telling me what people think of me. You know, I think you're this, Rob, and it's never some of it's nice, but most of it, some of that there isn't very nice. Someone tweeted me the other day, actually, Scott, I think you were in it as well, and they said, we want you to stop talking on the show about how people don't like you too. I think, did you see that tweet?
There was
of us. Yeah, and I read that and I couldn't respond to it because, like, what's the point? But we don't actually talk about it a lot. I don't think we do, but you do get it, and it's there. It's constant. It's always in your phone. It's always there on a screen, and it's not nice. It's not pleasant. I'm sure Marcus gets both. I'm sure he gets the worst kinds of abuse. I'm sure he gets racist abuse and personal abuse and all sorts. I also think he gets valid criticism through those channels, and I think that is okay. And you have to be able to say that those two things are different. And I'm not sure fans always do either. I think sometimes fans just go, oh, he plays for us, I love Marcus, so I just defend everything. I don't know. I think it's totally fine to be able to say Marcus Rashford hasn't played well today, and I'm going to highlight that. I think that's okay. You've still got to be able to have that right of reply. And Marcus has to take it. Like, you have to take that bit. I don't agree that you should take the abuse. And I think it's for a wider debate, Scott, that maybe social media companies now need to have better rules around this kind of stuff. Because I do think that we're in the middle of a...
They're never going to, are they?
No, yeah, well, I think we're in the middle of a mental health crisis, just in general in society, totally, yeah. And I think social media is absolutely one of the areas that's more than a pinprick. Like, it's one of the reasons why I think people's mental health has dramatically decreased in the last 10 or 15 years. Because we all live through these things that in my hand here, look, I enact it. People who are not watching on the YouTubes, you know, these phones dominate so much and it is difficult. It's hard work. And I think with Marcus, maybe that's a portal to the world for him because he has to live behind the scenes as a millionaire and as a footballer. He can't just go out. Though when he's in Belfast, he's all right going out, isn't he? So like, I think this is the thing. There is criticisms there that I think are valid, but at the same time, try and keep it to football. That's what we try and do on the show, isn't it? We want to keep it to football matters and not like who we like and who we dislike. We want to talk about the actual football. And I think Marcus this year, performances nowhere near good enough, nowhere near the applied standard, not doing all the work that we need him to do. Obviously, scoring goals is another thing. But this is why I think his head is on the chopping block at Manchester United and why he might be sold in the summer, because you could go and get someone else to do his job better than him, couldn't you? Maybe. Mate, is that valid? Like, that's not an attack.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we've spoken in the past about, and there's actually a piece that's come out this morning about it, and I had a conversation about this yesterday. Like, what happens next with Marcus Rashford? Because obviously, how do you fix this problem? Mm. Because Rashford goes through a season where he has a great season, and then there's another season where he's off the boil completely. And the question is, especially now, it's, will they sell him? Last summer, there was the question of, will they sell him? He signed a new deal. And obviously, the level of drop-off has been pretty stark. Yeah. He's not the only one, but Rashford's goals last season were masking a lot of United's deficiencies. And obviously, he would score the goals that meant games were 1-0 or 2-1. I had a conversation yesterday about how much is he worth? And... obviously, from the outside, people think that, oh God, his value has crumbled to the point where somebody said 30 million. I literally had a serious conversation where multiple people said he's worth 30 million quid.
That's definitely not a serious conversation.
And I and I said, if you think he's worth it, he's not going anywhere for 30 million quid. So this is what I think that he will end up staying, because I don't think the market's there for him at the moment. I think there's a handful of clubs maybe that could do it. PSG's always been the one. Whether they would look at Rashford now, you know, remains to be seen. But what's the how here? Because football finance is in such a weird position, in the sense of, like, Real Madrid, you know, they're getting Mbappe, they're spending their money on Endrick. He was never going there anyway. Barcelona don't have any money. Bayern Munich, no. Clubs in Italy can't afford it. PSG is the only one, or another Premier League club, and other Premier League clubs are having to rein in their own spending as well. So what happens? Where does he go? What is the price United would consider selling him for? And does that price mean that he won't go anywhere anyway?
I think that's all absolutely spot on, in the sense that it's about what is the market, where is the market. And I think his only market, being completely honest, is Paris Saint-Germain. So they're the only market, because they are the only ones with the money, and they're the only ones who can really give him an opportunity to go do something different on the same cash. Okay, so he'd be able to kind of maintain his wage or what he's on at Manchester United and be able to go and do that as Mbappe's replacement. Again, different debate about whether he should or shouldn't, or whether PSG would or wouldn't. I think the thing is, PSG are not going to decide whether they would go for Marcus Rashford because of social media. Like, that's not a thing. That's not, you know, they don't care about that. They're about what they want to do for themselves. I think the thing is with Marcus is that when he was 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, you're absolutely okay going through this cycle of one bad season, one good season. So like next year, Scott, we might see that Garnacho and Manu both fall off a bit. They might not be as effective next season. They've had really good campaigns this year. They're totally in our top two players for me, absolutely, like our best two players of the season in terms of consistent performances in a starting capacity. I think when you look at Marcus, we're now getting to a point where last year he signed that super huge contract that he totally earned by his actions on the football pitch, right? We're now at a point where he's on 350 grand a week. We've got brand new ownership behind the scenes, and we might again have a brand new manager. Let's be honest, we quite possibly will do. You have to decide that if new manager comes in and says, I love Marcus Rashford, is exactly what I want in my team, I'm going to play transition, I want to do this, I want to do that, then Marcus survives. I think if a new manager comes in and they go, do you know what? Rashford does not work in my press at all, and I'm going to be a pressing entity, and I want to play football like this. It's every chance that Dan Ashworth on day one turns up and says, we're not going to stick with Rashford then. It's going to be a football business decision. And I think United are definitely very keen to shed wages. Like, we know this. This is one of those things. So Rashi's on the highest wage, and Rashi isn't earning that wage at the moment. So that is the absolute truth. If Rashford comes back in next year, Scott, you've got a new manager, and he loves the new manager, whoever that might be, and he's happy again, he scores goals. And we just said, didn't we? Like, you know, Jason Wilcox has come to the football club, and one of his players through the academy at City was Jadon Sancho. Jadon might have a conversation with him now, and he might say, do you know what, Jadon, we're changing the manager, we want you back. Jadon Sancho might be all happy again and go, yeah, I want to come back. Let's put this badge on again. So I think there's a lot of that behind the scenes at United. And I know with the happiness factor, that part of Rashford's issues with the manager and maybe behind the scenes came through the whole Sancho period. But that's not to say that United won't find solutions for it. United might go, do you know what? We'll stick with these two this year, bring one back, make the other one happier. Or, Scott, they might go the other way completely and just go, new manager doesn't want anything to do with these two players, so we are going to sell them, and it will be a football decision. And I'm all right with
it. Do you think there's a chance that even if, let's say, Ten Hag stays and the situation above him changes,
yeah,
and there's more leadership, there's better clarity, there are strong individuals in strong positions within the club, like your Berardas, your Ashworths, Wilcox, a new head of recruitment, psychologists, I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. The United have, like, all of this kind
they
of stuff.
They do have psychologists at the club, yeah. They work with them, yeah. Do you know who brought that in? Ralph Rangnick. So yes, Ralph Rangnick is the guy who brought in, we haven't mentioned Ralph today, but Ralph brought that in because he went, what football club in the modern day doesn't have psychology in its department and football? Like, not everyone has it. And United were like, do they? So they have got psychologists there, yeah.
My wider point was, do you think that if there are more people, let's say Wilcox will probably be quite integral to it, Darren Fletcher's around, and he's obviously, I think his job will be that pathway from the youth team to the first team. But if you're getting new people in, like Wilcox, like Ashworth, like Berarda, plus whoever else joins, and they are the ones that get in Rashford's ear and turn it around. Maybe you can even extend that to Sancho, and maybe they can work some magic there, or maybe they can't. I don't know. But like I said this yesterday as well, I was asked about like Rashford because he's been elevated to this status as leader. I don't think he's ever been a leader.
He's not.
Never, ever. And obviously what he's earning now really puts him up as the poster boy for United. And with that maybe comes an element of you're expected to be a leader, but I don't think his character has ever really been that of a leader.
No.
So maybe he is somebody that needs to rely on other people, and he doesn't have that comfort around him because Ten Hag's the only one really who is there to do it. And Ten Hag has like tried a few times to be patient. And then the next time it's like, right, discipline. But if there's more of that around Ten Hag or whoever the manager is that fixable?
I think it's, in theory, yes, it is fixable. In reality, I think when we kind of look at this, one of the things I said on last week's show, and when we talked about the structure in previous weeks, is I said about having a functional HR department, right? And again, people look at HR and it's boring. Well, it is boring in business terms. Like HR, no offense to people who work in HR, but again, my experience with HR departments is kind of a boring facility, but it's an essential facility. And why I'm mentioning that is because, again, Marcus making that tweet last night might just seem to the world like a tweet. It's actually reflective of the business, yeah? And someone should be saying, Marcus, we need to have a chat. Come in, please. We need to talk about this. Now, Man United definitely haven't had that under the Glazers. That's not been a thing. But if you're Sir Jim Ratcliffe again, Scott, and today's storyline, yeah, in the world, is not about Man United, the football club. It's about Marcus Rashford making a tweet. you are not going to look at it through happy eyes. You're not going to give that person a cuddle and say, well, is it about your mental health or not? You're going to deal with it professionally. Do you know what I mean? So I think the thing is with you just said there, the direct question about supporting Ten Hag, I think is a bit of both. Is that I think that Jason Wilcox come in on day one and he probably thinks, this team's not very good. Why is it not very good? Well, the tactics are not great. How do you fix that? But I think then you look at that and talk to people like Marcus Rashford and they'll want their opinions and they'll say, well, tell us this year what's happened. Why has it gone wrong? Now, you and me have both said before, haven't we? It's the same set of players, different managers, different problems, but it's the same players and that's the issue. But it still means that you have to decide whether you make that leap of faith, whether you sell those players and then go buy new ones. Now, that's part of the story. But I think when it comes to Rashford, it is quite unique because he is seen as kind of a figurehead at the football club. And no one can really imagine him playing for another football team, really. But I think the truth is that these new business people coming in with Ineos won't think like that, Scott. They'll just go, do you score us goals? No, you don't. Are you doing tweets? Okay. I think we better just say goodbye to each other because there's that player over there that we like and we want to spend 50 million on him and you're eating up the budget. I'm actually all right with that. I'm fine with that because I think that's the way it should be. It should be salient and it should be straightforward. And I think with Marcus, he has to go on that football pitch and show that he means it, Scott, because I think the thing is the last few months, the thing I was most disappointed about with Marcus this year is not him not scoring goals. It is his being his outward body language on the football pitch. Yeah. And I back Marcus every year and always just say, no, he's an introvert. He's this, that, or the other. This year, Scott, he just doesn't bother turning up sometimes. That's the truth. That's a football assessment. And that makes me sad because I would like Marcus Rashford to be in our team and scoring lots of goals. Do you remember we did the show when I said Rashford, Ballon d'Or nominee? And we kind of had a bit of backwards and forwards and like, no, he isn't. Yeah. Guess what, Scott?
I said then he wasn't good enough for that.
But you're right and I was wrong. So I can stand up and say that, yeah? Because the point is that the body of work in the last 12 months proves it. Yeah, so 12 months ago before that, Marcus was absolutely at a really high standard and helping United and covering up problems like you described it a minute ago. This year, Marcus hasn't turned up for whatever reason, has fallen out with the manager for whatever reason, and has scored a lot less goals. And Man United are nowhere. So you have to decide whether you get that player back on and scoring goals or whether you just get rid. And I think it's somewhere in the middle at the moment with him. I really, really do. I think if you get a taker, PSG come in with a big fee, and I'm thinking about it in terms of business, new manager, yeah, okay, sell you. I've got to buy someone else for 20 or 30 million who can go do the job. You've already got Garnacho, Scott, who can play left side, yeah? Who can play the position. So, you know, we talk about these kids coming through. There's loads of them. Shay Lacy's going to be knocking on your door in the next year or two. He can play left or right. So there's all these things already going forward that maybe fans don't see now that United will be future planning and future proofing and going, well, Marcus is a good footballer, but maybe this is the time to sell. Maybe this is the time that we say, you go be happy somewhere else. Paris is a lovely city and you've got an offer on the table. Maybe this is the right time to part company.
Just for the entertainment value, let's have the conversation. How much would it cost to get Marcus Rashford out of Man United?
Marcus Rashford still in the current market, right? So let's look at it this way. So how much did we play for Højlund, Scott? 77 million? Yeah?
Yeah.
Man, that's a lot of money, isn't it? It's 20-year-old, unproven.
Rashford's 27 next season in October.
So Rashford's 27, right? So he's an older player, established player, someone who's totally proved that when he's happy and playing well, can score lots and lots of goals. In this marketplace, the current marketplace, under contract, that's the other side of this. We're not going to give him away for free because he's under a massive contract. Is that it will take something in excess of 80 million, probably more like 90 or 100, to get a player with the football and commercial value of Marcus Rashford. They are rare things, yeah. Marcus Rashford is a big commercial asset to a football club. Guess what? That means he's worth more. So his current form might be worth nothing. Do you know what I mean? But that's also why that if you don't have a market for a player, you might stick by him and say, well, do you know what? No one's going to pay this money at the moment. And we're not.
That is why I think he'll stay. I think he'll stay because of that.
I think he will more likely stay. That's part of it. But I think he'll more likely stay because we'll have a new manager. I think that's being completely honest, is that I don't think that, you know, if we're still talking about struggling against Sheffield United, but you win 4-2, there's no way that the people behind the scenes are going to be like, oh, well, this is something we really want to stick with. So that's not Ten Hag out. But I do think that if it's another manager in and you bring in someone else, like, go to Tuchel or someone like that. Rashford kind of suits Tuchel's system if you're going to defend deeper and look to be able to break on, you know, quickly in football matches. Rashford maybe fits that a little bit more. Rashford up top with Hoyland, as we said in the two, potentially. That could happen. And I think that's more likely what will happen as it stands, unless PSG come in and say, do you know what? No, Marcus Rashford's the guy. He's the guy we want. And we actually think we can get something out of him. And do you know what? United, we don't want to pay 100, but we'll give you 90. And United go, you know what? We want to buy some new players as well. And we're not exactly as rich as we used to be. And we want that 90 million. Anyone who thinks that Marcus Rashford is worth well south of that and much less of that, being completely honest, hasn't really got a clue about the player or the game. Really haven't.
I didn't say that. Anyway. right, we'll wrap up there. Get your comments in on Marcus Rashford, what you think will happen. Yeah. Actually, I say we'll wrap up there. Just one other quick mention. Like, Rob, I'm just going to run over some stuff that's floating around on social now from ESPN.
Sure.
And none of this is news to anybody, really. Or maybe some of it. Lists the players that could leave. Rafa Varane and Anthony Martial will leave as free agents. Yeah. And the departures will free up around £450,000 a week. Christian Eriksen's attracting interest from Turkey and will be allowed to leave for a fee with a year left on his contract. That, I mean, we could have said that.
Three of our top 10 earners.
Yeah. Victor Lindelof, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Scott McTominay and Harry Maguire, all out of contract in 2025, could leave for suitable offers unless they're prepared to sign new contracts on reduced terms. Casemiro attracting interest from Saudi. United listen to offers for Van der Beek, Sancho, Mason Greenwood, if evaluation is met. And then Rashford is mentioned as well, but does say that PSG speculation is wider than Mark and they prefer Rafa Leão at the moment. Mm-hmm. Also goes on to say, Southgate's admired. Sorry, I'm breaking down this whole story, but I feel like we can maybe get another 5 minutes out of it to just pick the bones out.
Yeah, we should.
And Southgate's admired, but England could play in the Euro final. United's first preseason fixture is the day after that game. And other candidates are under consideration, but sources have said that a lack of clear choice might just force Ineos to stick with the man in charge right now, Erik ten Hag. So I think that's the first time you've seen all that. So whatever you want to pick up.
As we said, marries up with what I just said a minute ago, that United are very keen to shed wages this year. So that is definitely going to be a huge part of this this transfer window coming up. There's players that you could kind of just reeled off there that almost can't be part of your future projects. Like, they can't be. Like, they're part of the issues now and been in the last 12 months. But because they're on such big wages, the only way to fix that is to move the wage. Get the wages off so you can pay other players. That's what it is. And you've got these young kids coming through now, which you will be playing more of. But you've also got to go still buy, haven't you? You've still got to go purchase. And that's all part of the bigger picture. Kind of said there about sticking with Eric. I think the thing is that they're saying, oh, there's no one on the market type thing, so I might have to stick with the manager. So it's complete garbage. It's garbage. There's plenty of people on the market. There's loads of people on the market. It might not be your perfect choice. You just said there, Southgate is admired. What that means is that Southgate and Ashworth have a relationship. We know that. In the same way that Ashworth has a relationship with Graham Potter, and Ashworth has a relationship with De Zerbi, and Ashworth has a relationship with all sorts of people, right? That's what that means. But I also think when you look at someone like Thomas Tuchel being on the market in the summer, that's why we did the show on him. There's absolutely no doubt that, again, United are looking for a Champions League winning boss. Guess what? He's available. So there is that there. I think with Eric, we've run out now, Scott, of the rhetoric of, oh, Eric can prove it in these next games. Like, Eric's going to
We did say several months ago that he has to start delivering. I know he's got injury problems, but...
But that's over now. Like, we're at the end of the season. Like, you could go and beat Newcastle at home, Scott. You could go throw the spanner in the works and thrash Arsenal, absolutely, completely smash them. And you go to Wembley and destroy Man City, and you're still not keeping your job. You're not. Because the body of work shows something else. And I think that's the way where Ineos is. just about Marcus, did a whole thing of Marcus and tweets and all of that. If I'm sure Jim Ratcliffe, if I'm looking at all of it through clear eyes, not with the conjecture that we have at Man United, and I'm thinking, I'm not putting up with that, and I'm not putting up with this rubbish football, because I just go get another coach. That's the way it works in business. So, yeah, I think that last bit there about that they might be forced to stick with him, they will only stick with Erik ten Hag, Scott, if Erik can sit down with them and convince them and say, actually, there are valid reasons why this hasn't worked for me and I want to play better football. And the way I'm going to do it is like this. We've not seen it on a football pitch. We've not seen the crumbs that we need to feed off to be able to say, yeah, that's going to work. So I think the general vibe at the moment is that Erik won't be at the club next year. That's just the general vibe that we get.
Rip it all down and start again is something I've said a few times. And, you know, as much of it as you
start
can.
Again.
Rip it up and start again.
That's the problem, isn't it? The Southgate thing, again, won't be dictated about England winning the Euros or getting to a Euro final. If they want Southgate, they'll go get him, right? They just will. But it's a bit like Nagelsmann, is that they made that decision early, didn't they, Germany? Because they're like, we don't want to do this where our manager might walk at the end or like still be in speculation, so we sign the contract. I think there are plenty of good managers out there that will be in the frame for the Man United job. There's like, what's mad to say that there isn't people out there, especially when you've got someone like Tuchel. It just might be that Tuchel's not particularly popular with the fans, which is true, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Right. So we will wrap it up right there. We'll be back early next week to pick through whatever's happening, because it's going to be a big summer. Obviously, we're getting towards Massive the summer. End of the season now. United have, is it 5 games left or 4?
Let's see. Big summer, new players, outgoings, but also new stadiums. It's going to be so much this summer. Manchester United are literally going to dominate the headlines going into this summer, because everyone who plays well at the Euros, Scott, you know what it's going to be, don't you? Anyone who plays well at the Euros, oh, look, Man United need that kind of player. You know, United have just sold Rashford. They need a forward now. Like, who are they going to go and buy? So, again, Man United will be, I think, the main talking point in the football world, just like Poland.
Just to sign off, the most important development of the last few days is that Man United now have a positive goal difference of +1. Anyway, that is...
God, it's so bad. Like, yeah. Can you imagine if we'd done it at the start of the season, someone said to us, coming up to the last 2, 3, 4 games of the season, you'd have a goal difference of that. We wouldn't have believed them, would we? We'd have gone, that's
unbelievable. It's been like that for a few years, though, now. The last 3 years, I think.
Kind of, but at least we think with Ole, you kind of knew what way it might go, and you always knew with, like, Jose, it might implode and all those. I think with Erik, we were all a lot more positive 12 months ago. We were like, maybe year two, he'll be able to get things going in the right direction a little bit more after winning a trophy and coming third. We thought that was a brilliant start, but completely honestly, it hasn't been, and I don't think it's just been about injuries.
Right. I've tried to wrap up 3 times, but we keep talking. Sorry, everyone. That's it from us today. The Promised Land. You can subscribe on Apple and Spotify for audio episodes. The Promised Land, the Man United podcast, is where you can find us on YouTube as well. So please get across, subscribe, leave a comment, hit the notification bell so you never miss a show, and like the stream as well. Follow Rob and I on social media as well, at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and for the show, @TPLMUFC. And until next week, hopefully United can stumble across the line against Burnley and get another 3 points, and we'll see. But yeah, until then, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Get your comments in on anything that we've discussed today. And see you soon. Have a fantastic weekend. This has been the Promised Land podcast.